Okay, and so today, my name is Lynn Meinke, and we're going to be learning something about coaching presence today. What it is, and as assessors, what do we look for when we are assessing a student's coaching around coaching presence? And I hope all of you have gotten the handouts. There are some slides, there are some pictures of slides, and you got a transcript as well. If you haven't gotten that, feel free to email me at my email address with ILCT, and I'll be happy to get you a copy. So again, for those of you coming in, we're starting to record as we get started here. If most of you could go on mute during the time, and if you do not have a mute button on your phone, star 6 will mute you, and if you want to speak, then star 6 again, and we'll be able to hear you. We have quite a few folks, over about 115 people signed up for today, so I don't expect that we'll have that many, but as you can hear from the beeps, a lot of people are on. So let's get started with this wonderful, wonderful core competency. It's core competency number 4, coaching presence. So what is coaching presence? So I'd like to start with that all coaching starts with you. You bring who you are. You bring your values. You bring your whole being. You bring your caring and your empathy. So who are you? And what do you demonstrate to anyone just by being with you? Part of coaching presence also means that you really believe, down to your DNA, that your clients are whole, competent, capable, creative, and resourceful. As a coach, you also fully embody the fact that coaching is about the client, and not about you or your beliefs or your opinions. And in fact, as I like to tell students in foundational class, your beliefs and opinions do not matter. Only what the client believes and their opinions. And so what does that mean? It means that the client is the focus of any coaching conversation. And so what we, as coaches, we fully explore the client's position on anything, where they're coming from, their worldview, their ideas, their perspectives. By the way, if any of you have any questions along the way, feel free to ask them. If we run over, and we may, what I'm very willing to do, I have set aside extra time. I will stay on the call to answer questions also at the end of today. So far, it's about coaching presence. It's about you. What do you bring? But that's also in relationship to your work with the client, and that you are totally focused on the client. As I said, your beliefs and opinions don't matter, only what the client believes and their opinions. Now, there's an interesting thing that I have found that frequently happens. I've often gotten clear clues about what coaches believe or their opinions depending on the depth of their exploration with clients. And here's what I've discovered. Often, if the coach approves of what the client wants to achieve, there's not a lot of exploration, just acceptance, or oftentimes you'll hear cheerleading. If the coach disapproves of what the client wants or they have another opinion about it, oftentimes then they will go and explore in great depth. So here's the deal. No matter what you think, no matter your beliefs or opinions, it is your job to fully explore the client's desired outcome so that the client either becomes fully committed to their outcome or they come to realize their outcome needs further exploration or research. So beware, are you signaling the client very subtly about your beliefs and opinions by the level or intensity of your exploration? Another piece that's very important in coaching presence is that you as a coach stay what we call charge neutral. Charge neutral. What does this mean? It means that no matter the topic, no matter the intensity of the client's emotions, you stay neutral. Again, you don't let your emotions, your beliefs, your opinions intrude. As core competency number 4 clearly states, when you are working with strong emotions, you are able to self-manage, is how, what they call it. So you're going to see an example of that in what's going on in the transcript today. So that's a very high-level overview of core competency 4. As we get into it, I'll add some more because I'm going to go over the core competency as well as the PCC markers. But let me take you now to another level, because a lot of you are going on for certifications at one level or another. Sirs. Which I do a lot of. What are we looking for that indicates or demonstrates that the coach fully embodies and incorporates coaching presence in their work with their clients? Generally, or overall, we are looking to see if the coach is present or aligned with the client. Are you on the same wavelength with the client? Are you connected at that level? Of course, there's space between you and the client, but are you connected in that way that you're fully present and aligned with the client? And are you curious about not only what the client is saying, but who your client is as a human being? It's this combination of both. Are you curious? By the way, that curiosity is always in the service of the client's learning, not just because you're nosy, but are you curious about what the client is saying as well as who the client is as a human being? As assessors, we're also looking to see if you as a coach understands partnering. Because that's a huge aspect of core competency 4, and we're going to get into it a little bit deeper. Partnering means that the coach is always keeping the client in charge of the content and direction of the coaching meeting, or I sometimes say you're always keeping the client at choice. So the client is always in charge of the content and direction or at choice. As assessors, we're also looking to see how the coach responds, another huge word, responds to the client. So the client says something, how does the coach pick up on what the client just said and respond to it? Now, here's a very important thing for you to remember. As assessors, we are evaluating how do you, as the coach, respond to the client's input. We are not evaluating how the client responds to what you're saying. Okay, so I think a lot of newer students in coaching get that mixed up. They're thinking, oh, I'm going to be evaluated on how the client responds to what I say. No, it's the opposite. How are you responding to what the client says? So just to make this a little clearer, I'm going to give you a couple of examples of partnering, or one clearer example of partnering, and a couple examples of responding. So let's say the client comes to you and they want to explore in their coaching meeting how to be a better leader, how to get her children to help around the house, and how to have more time with her husband. So these are the 3 topics that the client brings. They want to take a look at these. For partnering, you would say something like, okay, client, you have these 3 topics and you'd like to explore. Which one do you want to start with? Or you may say, how would you like to prioritize these 3 so that you can start with your top priority? Okay? So notice, I'm hearing some background noise. If you can go on mute, please. So remember, that partnering is giving the client choice, keeping the client always in control of the direction and content of the coaching. Now, responding would be, let's go back to this original little example. So you have these three topics to explore. Let's start with having more time with your husband, the coach says. Now, in that way, the coach is responding, but the coach is not partnering. Here's another example of responding. The client says, it's really confusing on how I want to proceed with setting up my new business. And the coach says, so right now it's confusing on how to proceed, and as you think about it in this moment, what immediately comes to your mind about that? So notice how the coach is staying right with the client and then going even further, looking more towards the future. What immediately comes to your mind about that? Because obviously this client's been thinking about it. Here's another example of responding. The client states, it's funny because I see Sam and I in similar ways. And so it's out of character for me to try to push him in a way that is uncomfortable for me. And the coach says, oh, so this is an interesting challenge. You are challenging him to grow in an area that you are also really being challenged to grow. So in that case, notice, instead of a question, you had a direct statement or direct communication. So any questions or comments about these examples, the difference between partnering and responding? Okay, so if not, or if any pop up later, bring them. What I'd like to do is go to your handouts, and we're going to go to the core competency 4. And let's just take a look at what this core competency says. If you'll notice on the slide, I have bolded certain words, so I'm not going to go in a lot of depth, greater depth than you haven't taken. That's a place to really get in depth on it. So notice in core competency 4, as a coach, you're fully conscious, you create spontaneous relationship with your client, and your style is open, flexible, and confident. So look at the subcategories. That's the overarching kind of idea about coaching presence. You're there, flexible, spontaneous, confident. But there are 7 subcategories. So you're present and flexible, dancing in the moment. You've heard that phrase a lot in coaching, dancing in the moment. Here's the caveat. Remember that the client always leads. You don't lead in the dance. You follow the client's lead. You access your own intuition and you trust your inner knowing. You go with your gut. I want you all to get this because this seems to be a stumbling block for a lot of folks. That, yes, your intuition, what's popping into your head, your mind, as you're working with the client? What's that inner knowing that comes about? My favorite definition of intuition is knowing without knowing how you know. Knowing without knowing how you know. Or some people say it's what my gut's telling me. Yes, you have permission to use that in coaching. What's popping up for you? Therefore, you would be doing 3, not knowing and taking risks. You're putting something out to the client. You don't know. You're taking a risk to see if it lands or not with the client, if it makes sense. If it doesn't, please just move on. You don't have to hammer it home to the client. 4 says that there are a lot of ways you can work with the client, and you choose in the moment what is most effective. There's a slight, to me, error in that. You don't know what is effective until you've tried it. So what I would say here is you choose in the moment what you think is going to be most effective, and you try it out. That would be taking a risk as well. 5 says you use humor effectively to bring lightness and energy. The other thing that humor does, or lightheartedness as I like to call it, is it opens up creativity. It allows your client to much more easily go into the place of possibility. And so, yes, humor, being lighthearted, even if the topic is quite serious, you don't have to get bogged down with the client and suck. If you are being with the client, if you are in alignment with the client, you can hear the seriousness of the event, but you don't have to be plodding, heavy, etc., because it's oftentimes your lightheartedness, your lightness, that allows the client to begin to think more creatively. Number six subcategory says that you as a coach are able to confidently shift perspectives, and you're able to experiment. Yes, try out. Notice what core competence is saying. Try out things. Take a risk. Be with the client. You're going to follow the client. The client's always in charge, but what you're bringing in adds to it. It takes them beyond the present. It takes them, what you're doing is taking them into areas that look forward. Remember, coaching is always forward-looking. And number seven, I want to highlight, because this is what I was doing in my opening piece with all of you, is that as a coach, you demonstrate confidence in working with strong emotions, and you can self-manage. Notice that word, self-manage, or not be overpowered, or whatever the client is bringing. You don't get sucked into it. You don't move into sympathy. You can be fully compassionate and empathic without moving into sympathy. Comments or questions about that quick journey through the core competency four? Okay, let's go ahead.
Oh, hey, Lynn, this is Kendall. And,
yeah, Kendall.
I know that the big issue for a lot of us is when we have a conflict of belief systems with our clients. And so my question is really, is it reasonable as a coach, is it something that we should be able to do is when we are fundamentally separate from the client in terms of their belief system, should we really pass that client off, or should we try to work with that client understanding what our job is?
So here's the deal. You're never going to be in 100% alignment with everybody on your beliefs. Your job is to be what? Charge neutral. Your job is to allow the client to explore their beliefs, to be with their beliefs, and not give your opinion. You don't have to agree with everybody. Now, if you find that it's impossible for you to do that, that your bias is so strong that it's continuously getting in the way, then there's two other things you can do. Refer the client and also get some coaching on for yourself about being able to be with people that have beliefs that are different than yours. Because a lot of people are going to have beliefs that are different than ours, and our job is to be able to be with them and to be open. It doesn't mean you accept what they believe, but you don't put them down. And maybe in listening to their position, their perspective, you get a different perspective, which opens you up and allows you to be more open to alternative beliefs. Doesn't mean you change your opinion. Does that answer, Kendall?
Yes, very much so. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Anyone else?
Yeah, Lynn, this is Nancy.
Yeah, Nancy.
Yeah, so my where I have a challenge, I think, with coaching presence is when I've worked with someone for a very long time, and I have a couple clients that I, off and on throughout the years, I've worked with for maybe 5 years or a little bit less, But you get to know somebody quite well after that. And so what I find myself doing is thinking that I already know enough about them that I don't stay curious or present. So I've caught myself a few times trying to lead the conversation because I think I know them already so well.
Right.
And so, yeah, so I was wondering if you could speak to that.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting observation on your part, and good for you for observing that. And so how do you keep your coaching fresh? How can you instead, what you're doing is assuming, and you know what to assume does. So it's very important when you find yourself doing that is to remind yourself that, what can I remind myself? This is a unique human being, and even though they may have thought one way 5 years ago, they may not think the same way today because they too are growing. And so to always keep it open to what other perspectives might there be. That's a term that's very nice. What other perspectives could there be about this? And stay out of the assuming. Is that useful, Nancy, at all?
Yes, for sure. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Hey, Lynn, this is Al.
Yeah, Al.
So I'd like to play off of that and say that I think that last example, when you develop that relationship, especially for a couple of years, I think it also sets you up for what could be perceived as a mentor type of relationship where you're not being charge neutral.
So that's something to be aware of, too, that you stay in the coaching frame, that you don't slip into mentoring. So, be aware of that and keep out of it. And maybe even remind the client, whoops, we're moving into mentoring here. So we've derailed. It's okay to say that to a client. Hey, we've gotten off track here. So what are your thoughts about this? Not what are mine. What do I do? It doesn't matter what I do. What do you do? Because mentoring is really about what you do. And that person wants to take that on in some way. So, yes, stay out of that. So let's take a look now at the PCC markers, because I want to get on to our script here in a moment. You'll notice again that I have bolded some words, and I forgot to bold words on 5, 6, 7, and 8, and I'll go over that in just a second. The coach, you act in response to both the whole person of the client and what the client wants to accomplish in the coaching meeting. Very important, and it may be a shift from what you're used to doing. So the way I like to put this is you coach the person, not the outcome. You coach the whole person, not just the outcome. It has to be an integration of both. And so suppose the client wants to get the next promotion coming around. You don't just coach to the promotion, but you also integrate that with who this person is. Well, what would it mean for you to get that promotion? If you got that promotion, what would that allow you to do differently? How would your life change if you got that promotion? Those are just a couple of examples of integrating the person, the who, which is the whole person, with the what the client wants to accomplish. So what happens very frequently in new coaches is they only coach to the outcome. They don't include the whole person. At the PCC level, and I'm stressing the PCC level because I'm assuming most of you eventually want to get there, is you need to integrate the whole person as well. So that may be some sort of newer information. So you coach the whole person, not just the outcome. You integrate the who with the what. Number two, you are observant, empathic, and responsive. The word to keep in mind here is and. As the coach, you need to demonstrate in the coaching that you are all three. You're observing, you're being responsive, and empathic or empathetic, whichever word you prefer. And that has to be demonstrated throughout the coaching conversation. So you're noticing what's going on, you can be understanding about it, and you're responsive to the client. You're right in tune with them. Number three, a lot of you have some familiarity with, but usually miss half of it. Coaches notice and explore energy shifts. So many of you notice it. Oh, I noticed that your energy went up, or your energy tanked when you thought about going to work on Monday. But you're leaving out the other half. Explore the energy shift. So I noticed that you got excited about starting your new business. What about that excites you? Now you're exploring. So you need both, not just the noticing, but the exploring as well. We've sort of gone over number four already. You are able to demonstrate or exhibit curiosity. Why? With the intent to learn more, not just for you, but for the client to learn more. Keep in mind, coaching is a learning and developmental model. Number five, now here we start with that second word you're going to see in these next four, partners. You partner, we've already talked about partnering, keeping the client in charge. By what? Supporting the client to choose what happens in the coaching meeting. Number six, you partner by inviting the client to respond in any way to whatever you say. And you accept the client's response. So you pick up on something, you give it back to the client, and you may ask the client something like, so what are the thoughts that come to your mind as I say that? You're inviting them to respond. Number seven, you partner again by how? Playing back the client's possibilities. They've come up with several different ideas, so you give it back to them and ask them the direction they want to go in with that. And number eight, you partner again with the client by encouraging what? The client to formulate his or her learning. So as you went through this, as you explored this, what were you noticing? What were you learning, client? What stood out for you? So comments or questions about the PCC markers. The markers, by the way, were developed as a way for the assessor, some inter-rater reliability. Because what was being noticed was a lot of assessors were not on the same wavelength. So these have been developed to get the assessors in alignment so that we know what we're looking at for coaching, for in this case, coaching presence. How is this person, this coach, demonstrating that they can not only know, but can use coaching presence in their coaching with a client? So this is what we're looking for. Now, obviously, you may not meet all eight of these in any one coaching meeting because overall the PCC markers, I think there are 48 of them. I have to recount them periodically. But you need to meet over 50% of them. So any comments or questions about the core competencies or the PCC markers?
This is Brenda. Can you tell me how this list was distributed? Because I don't have it, and I would like to be able to follow along.
This was sent out when you registered for today. You can also find the whole list of the PCC markers on the ICF website, and I think it's probably on ILCT's website.
This is Barbara.
My name is
I did not get anything either, so I'm glad somebody mentioned it. I thought I was just out.
My name is Betty, and I'm saying the same thing, too.
Yeah, okay, kindly do me a favor. For those of you that did not get it, either email me or email Amy and let her know, because the handouts were sent out
Right. There's another. I'm another participant that didn't receive it, so I will do the same as well. There's clearly several. Yeah. Thank you.
So that means some of you have not gotten the transcript for today.
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Correct.
Okay. So that's what we're going to go to next. So I need somebody who is willing to be the coach and someone that's willing to be the client, but you're not going to do it. We're going to be reading this transcript as if it were a play, okay? And we're going to do what we call a read-through of a play. And those of you that have not gotten it, you can follow along. You're going to be an observer, a listener. I'm hearing background sounds. Somebody's talking. Please go on mute. So who's willing to be the coach to read this transcript? Oh, come on. I need a coach and a client. You're not going to have to invent anything. It's in front of you if you have the transcript.
Does anyone have the transcript?
I don't have it either.
It was sent out with the slides. It was sent out with the slides.
Hello. This is Amy. Can everyone hear me?
Yeah.
Hi. So if you go to the there's a freeconferencecall.com wall, so you can go to freeconferencecall.com/wall/ILCT2016, so 2016, and you can the downloads are right there.
Actually, Amy, that would be helpful if you could send that over, please, because I'm certain that I'm not the only one that didn't capture that based on your input.
And you,
now. Thank you for that.
I'm on the internet, right? I can only type so fast.
Is that really quick?
Can you repeat that, please?
Amy?
Sure. It's freeconferencecall.com/wall/ILCT2016.
2016. And when you say slash, are you looking at a forward?
A forward slash, yep.
I need a coach and a client here. I need two actors or actresses. I don't care.
Well, this is Brenda. I'll play one role. I do have the transcript, and I'm printing it now.
Okay, great. Thank you, Linda. And who? I need one other person.
It's actually Brenda.
Brenda, I'm sorry. Who will play opposite Brenda?
Lynn, this is Ellen. I will play the other part.
Okay, Ellen, thank you.
My pleasure.
So, Ellen, why don't you play the client?
Okay.
And we will have Brenda be the coach. This transcript, we may not be able to get it all finished because I'm looking at the time. It takes approximately 28 minutes or something like that to read through, and I wanted time for discussion. But as I said earlier, I'm willing to stay on after. So, so let's see. Brenda, do you have the transcript in front of you now?
Yes, I do.
Oh, awesome. So why don't you ladies just go ahead and get started, and for the rest of you, the audience, the investors in this pre-Broadway production, right? we're going to go for broke. Pay attention to what are you experiencing within you as you listen to this, and what are you noticing about the coach as well and the client? Where do you hear partnering? Where do you hear responsiveness? Where do you maybe pick up on the client, the coach managing their own emotions? Where do you pick up on intuition? Because that's a big one, too. So let's just keep those questions in mind, and let's go ahead and let's do this read-through. So Brenda and Ellen, please go right ahead.
Okay, so what I would like to do today is I'd like to do a demo of coaching. And now that you all kind of know what it looks like on paper, and some of you have tried it out, you are all the observers. So I do need a client, somebody, Ellen. Please make it easy so I can look good. We may not change the world today, but we'll do some coaching. So who would like to get coached today on something that they're interested in?
This is Nancy, Ellen. I don't mind doing it.
Okay, great, Nancy. So like I said, the rest of you are observers. So you sort of know now the three sections, the beginning, the middle, the end. So pay attention because at the end we'll debrief, okay? So Nancy, thank you so much for volunteering.
Okay, for sure.
So Nancy, what is it you'd like to focus on today?
I am really struggling with the upcoming election. I've been losing sleep over it, and it's something that I just need to sort out in my mind.
Okay, so you want to explore what's going on with you around the election so that you can apparently make your own choice.
Yes, yes. It's something that's very important to me, and so I take it kind of personal.
Okay. So by the end of our time together today, what is it that you'd like to take away?
I would like to be able to see a clear choice.
So you'd like a clearer choice.
Uh-huh.
And as you think about this clearer choice, what would let you know that you've come to a clearer choice in this election?
I want to feel better inside about what direction I choose. I want to be content with my decision.
So there would be a felt sense of contentment.
Yes.
Okay. So obviously we all know what's going on, but where are you right now? What's going on?
Personally, I'm fiscally conservative, and I'm a social libertarian. So that would kind of leave me as a registered independent because I have a little bit of views of both. So as far as being loyal to one party or the other, I can't say I am. I just always make the best choice.
Yeah, so you're walking in both camps, depending whether we're talking about money or we're talking about social issues.
Yes, yes. That's a good thing.
Okay, yeah. So you're a registered independent, and as you're doing this balancing act now of two things, you're wanting to see where do you come out on this for this election.
Yes. I want to have some sort of inner peace in the choice that I make, and I don't even know if it's going to be possible.
What may make it not possible?
I would say it's the best of two evils is a kind of the way that I think of it, if there's such a thing. The better of two evils, yeah. And so neither one I feel really good about inside.
Okay. So I was going to ask you about your vision, but I think you've sort of given it to us, that your vision you're not sure about. What you really want, though, is this inner peace of some kind between the two choices that you see as two evils. Well, that's a pretty powerful word. What makes it evil for you?
Well, it might be a little bit of a long answer, but I've never enjoyed the celebrity being displayed from The Apprentice, displaying from The Apprentice. I've never been somebody who was a follower, somebody who respected the particular person, and the same with Hillary. So I'm coming into this election feeling like both candidates have set a negative feeling inside for me, and it's getting to the point that I feel like one is so socially awkward that I can't get past it to see who he is. And the other is so caught up in the dishonesty that I can't get past that to see who she would really be as a president, who either would be.
Okay, but you use this word evil. So what does that mean for you?
You know, what it means for me is that I truly have fear in my heart about what the future would look like with either one. And that puts me in a position of labeling it as an evil emotion for me. it does feel like I'm coming around to go more Trump, just because when I analyze his flaws, because he's, like I said, extremely socially awkward, and he is just a rude, disgusting individual. Sorry. but I haven't really seen horrible things that he's done. I haven't seen that he would do something horrible for the country. And then I would look at Hillary, and I feel like there's so many lies and deceit. We wouldn't even know. We would have no choice as a nation if there were horrible things done to our country. She would be super deceitful and hide everything.
Okay, so for you, that's defined evil.
Yes.
Okay, so it's interesting with that word evil. If you turn it around, you know it spells live.
I didn't know that.
Or live, yeah. Yeah, if you spell it backwards, it's L-I-V-E, or life, live or life. So when you think about the opposite of evil as live, if you just turn that backwards, what would that look for you? What would that look like for you?
I'm thinking that it would feel very peaceful in making the decision, but it feels like there's going to be no decision made that gives me total peace inside.
Okay.
And so, yeah, the opposite would give me more peace.
Okay, right. So when you are in places like this where you're conflicted and you see both people, like in this case, they are certainly flawed individuals like we all are at some level, how do you usually work with that?
I rely on logic. I would say that I try to break down the facts, and I try to eliminate the emotional aspect in it. I think that way I have kind of decided I'm leaning towards Trump is because my disgust in him is emotional and my disgust in Hillary is more factual.
Okay, and so one you see as an emotional response, the other is you see more factual.
Yes.
As you think about this, what is it? Let's approach this from a different, because we're looking sort of at the pros and cons right now, aren't we, from what you're talking about? And we're looking at the emotional versus the factual.
Yes.
And you see, with Hillary, it's more factual right now, and with Trump, it's more emotional.
Yes, yes, definitely.
Okay, let's switch them.
Okay.
What do you see that's factual about Trump?
I don't really see a lot of factual speculation. I see a lot of maybes, and that's not tangible. I don't think that there's been much proven on him other than just, like I said, he's such a disgusting human being to me. Wrong person to play this role. And so that's why I stay in the emotional. Okay, what do I know factually? I know he's made an incredible running mate. I really like Pence. I think Pence is fantastic. I think that some of his entourage is unbelievable, and I have to hope that they can keep Trump in check. And so the emotional focus is on the lies with Hillary. I don't like to be lied to. I just don't. I mean, I am such a fact person. Please tell me the truth, even if it's hard. I don't care. I just want honesty and truth. And I look at her, and I look at all the little things that have come out, and she just got me too upset because she flat said she hate. I mean, she's finding disgust in humanity now and in people, and that I can't get over certain things that I'm hearing. And so there is an emotional aspect, I guess, that intertwined with her factual and less factual with Trump emotional.
Okay, really? Okay. So there you were, combining the two with Hillary, and you're saying that for you, Trump does not have as many facts.
Well, the facts aren't as damning, maybe, unless there is something I don't know. It just seems like speculation, and also I don't like to be told what to think. And so I don't watch a lot of news. I don't know if that helps in this, but I feel like I can come up with my own views if somebody would give me the facts, and you just can't hardly find that anymore. So if I go in for the news, I read it on the Internet, just the facts. And then I don't listen to commentary. And that's probably helped me more, to be open to go one way or the other, because commentary kind of pushes you in one way or the other.
So where are you getting, since you want to rely on thinking this through on your own, how do you go about then getting the facts for you? Or maybe I should use a different word, because facts, you're using that in a certain way and you're using emotion in a certain way. But how do you get the information then?
I read the news out of London, BBC, and other broadcasting systems in London. I was turned on to those years ago by a naturopath. They said you'll get the most fantastic news here. And so that's where I go to get a lot of the information. I do hear a little bit on CNN. But, you know, again, my trust is so low with the American news because it's so tainted.
Okay. So right now where you're getting your information is from the BBC and the CNN. And that's what you're listening to or not listening. That's what you're reading.
I don't listen. I read. Uh-huh.
You're reading.
And I like doing that because then, you know, just like after the debate, one of the top stories for CNN was discussing all the body language about the debate. And I don't care about body language. I want to hear substance. So when you read it, you can go down to 4 or 5. It's actually as tangible. And you don't have to listen to the hoopla. And I like that. That's why I chose to read. That's why I choose to read instead of listen.
Uh-huh, okay. And so what are you learning now for you? As we're working on this, as you're exploring this, where are you now as you've outlined that they're both evil from your perspective?
I feel a little bit like I shouldn't. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
I feel a little bit like I shouldn't vote just because I'm so tainted. But then I don't know who wins then. You know, it's like, then I can't gripe about who wins if I don't participate in the voting.
Yeah, there's that conundrum. If you don't participate, then you can't complain later on.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have this dilemma between two tainted people, obviously showing their humanity in technicolor, depending on which way you look at it for either one, right?
Right.
And you're saying, which of these two people, since I want to cast a vote, which of these two do I want to vote for?
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
And what you're saying is that with Trump, your disgust with him is more on an emotional basis. And you're saying that, you know, what has come out about him has not been proven. If you're looking at Hillary, you're believing from what you're hearing that the facts are there that, you know, she's lied. And then there's some emotional attachment to that as well.
I think that's a fair statement, yes. Yeah. Like I said, I just don't like to be lied to. But then at the same time, sometimes I ask myself, how many times have we had somebody in the office, a president, that has been like that and we haven't known because they haven't been vetted like they are nowadays?
Yeah, and then through history you learn about them, right?
Yeah, I mean, look at what happened to Bill Clinton, and then you know how much JFK is loved, and he slept with a lot of women. You know, nowadays people are so dissected that you get every point.
Yeah.
And I also feel like I haven't heard a lot of talk. Like I mentioned that I get news from CNN, I feel like CNN doesn't compare. I would love for somebody to compare, you know, factually instead of being tainted one way or the other, just literally across the board. You know, this person is going to offer you this, and this person is going to offer you something else, and have it very spread out correctly. But now it's just hard to find anywhere.
So in your exploration, what you said is that you want to read things. What other sources could you read that might give you more information?
I would say local news. I could probably read the paper more. I just don't usually like American. Reporters aren't reporters anymore. They're all commentators. They all give their opinion, every one of them. And even if they say they don't, they're all so tainted that it's just disheartening to me.
Go ahead.
Like I said, I would love raw honesty. I mean, let them be brutally honest.
Uh-huh. So something's been coming up for me as you've been talking about this wanting to read, and I'd be willing to share it with you if you want to hear it.
Absolutely.
Okay, so have you gone to each candidate's website and looked at what they're proposing?
I thought of this because it kept getting mentioned in the debate. I did watch the debate, but it's what kept getting mentioned in the debate was go to my website. And I don't want to hear things from their side as far as vetting the other person. I want to hear their facts and their plans, but I don't want to hear them vet one another because they're not going to give an honest vet. They're going to just demonize each other so bad that, I mean, they're ripping each other to shreds, and they're both so flawed.
Well, they are, but apparently what I'm understanding is that each of their websites tells you their policies or what they want to accomplish.
Yes, correct.
So that's what I was referring to, not that they bash somebody else.
Okay. No, I've not read their policies off their website.
Okay, so what else do you need? You've talked about that you want to use the written word, that you're not using U.S. reporters. What else is it that you need to make your choice?
I don't think I'm going to get what I need because I really need a straight comparison by somebody that's neutral, and I don't think that's out there or possible. So I'm just going to have to keep digging through what? I don't think this is a situation I can come out with exactly what I want, and I have to come to terms with that.
Okay, so what would that be like for you then for you to, because when you started out, you were very much more in turmoil, and you're sort of reconciling now that you probably, there's not going to be any definitive way to discern this, that it comes down to what you read and learn.
Yeah, I guess. I'm constantly second-guessing myself. I think I've made up my mind, and then I am the perfect example of an independent. I truly just can't figure this out. There's one situation that I do find important, and that's closed borders. I live in Arizona, and anybody that lives over on the West Coast truly knows what it's like to have an open border. The East Coast has no clue. Those on the East Coast, it's brutal, brutal, brutal. Like, if you guys think you know, you don't until you live over here. It's so bad. An open border is so, so bad. I mean, living here right now, pour into the country. It's like a revolving door, and I have friends that are even illegal. So I'm torn between the decision, but I think it's what's safer for the country. So that one issue, I kind of lean towards making sure that's important. I think Hillary said that it's important to have completely open borders. That scares me.
So that's a major concern for you, the border.
Yeah.
So how can you find out more about the stances on borders? And what do you mean by closed borders versus open borders? How does that get defined by each candidate?
Even keeping the status quo, it's scary to me because it's more open than people realize. And so working towards more regulation and, catching people and releasing people, it's not okay.